Okay, I'm actually glad there aren't too many people here because I all of a sudden have a stomach problem. this afternoon I thought, well, if I have to run out, it'll be okay. I can kind of say that and you'll all understand it because it is a mental health EPI workshop. So I'm going to present today about a study that we've been doing for a while, but this was kind of the first cut, looking at trends in mental health and related hospitalizations in the California's reproductive age population for the 15-year period of 1991 to 2005. I'd like to acknowledge my co-presenters, our co-investigators, Linda Remy, who's sitting as a lonely person on the left side of the room there, and Ted Clay. All of us are from the Family Health Outcomes Project in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at University of California, San Francisco. And none of us have any financial relationships to disclose. What I'm going to do is first talk about the impetus for this study, then talk a little bit about very bullet points about comorbidity, mental health, and comorbid conditions. Then I will talk about our study objectives, methods, review the results, draw some conclusions, and make some recommendations. The National Comorbidity Study Survey found that 32% of adults reported an episode of mental illness in the previous year, and 57% reported a lifetime prevalence of mental illness. The National Institute for Mental Health reports that 67% of women and 76% of men were parents and had mental illness. Women with mental illness history are at increased risk of suffering additional mental illness episodes during pregnancy and are at higher risk for suffering from postpartum depression. Pregnant women with mental illness symptoms or mental illness episodes are at increased risk for having infants with birth defects who are premature or who are born low birth weight. And older children of depressed mothers suffer impaired social, emotional, intellectual, and language development. Children of mentally ill parents are also at risk for developing major depression, anxiety disorders, and substance dependence. The social service literature shows that 70 to 80% of mothers with mental illness lose their children to foster care at some point during their child-rearing years. Information from the most recent California Health Interview Survey shows that those reporting mental illness have only a 50% chance of finding services for their mental illness. And California adults have been found to have greater unmet need for mental illness services than any of the other states in the Western region and also the United States as a whole. So what this really tells us is there's a tremendous prevalence of this disease, lifetime prevalence, in reproductive age population, and it has even more serious effect because of the impact it has on pregnancy and children and the family as a whole. In terms of comorbid conditions, there's an extensive literature that describes comorbidity between mental illness and substance abuse. And as a result of that, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality Clinical Classification System codes mental illness and substance abuse as all under the mental illness category and they are specific subcategories under the mental health category. The literature also identifies a very strong association between mental illness and injury. So our study objectives were to describe variations in characteristics and outcomes for California adults aged 15 to 44 with mental illness, substance abuse, or injury encounters with the healthcare system, either because they were admitted to hospital in California between 1991 and 2005, or because they were seen in the emergency room in the year 2005. We also want to describe the 15-year hospitalization trends for mental illness and substance abuse by age, gender, and race ethnicity. And to determine race and ethnic disparities in mental illness, substance abuse hospital admissions over time. We use two data sources from the California Statewide Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development. We use the hospital patient discharge abstracts between 1991 and 2005 and the emergent department ED visit data for 2005. The reason we only have 1 year is that's the first year that California began collecting and making available emergency room encounter data. We also use the California Department of Finance population estimates to develop population-based rates of admission for the various conditions. We use SAS analytics software, and we classified our records using the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality clinical classification system that I mentioned before. We linked, for the hospital for the 15 years of hospital discharge data, we linked records for individuals. So we developed a person-level data set so we could look at individuals' trends and patterns. And again, to repeat, our population for this study were adults between age 15 to 44. Again, we only had 1 year of ED data, and we decided as a preliminary to doing the trend analysis, we would compare encounters both in the ER and then in the patient discharge data. In the patient discharges, there were about 600,000 records discharges. 24% of them had a mental illness substance abuse diagnosis, either as a primary diagnosis, a secondary diagnosis, or mentioned as a DRG. We also had that 13% of cases had an injury diagnosis. For the almost 3.5 million emergency department visits, 10% had a mental illness substance abuse diagnosis, and 29% had an injury diagnosis. In both the patient discharge and the emergency room populations, men represent the majority of mental illness substance abuse cases in both patient discharge and ED data, respectively, and injury cases as well, and in patient discharge and emergency room encounters. Whites represented the greatest proportion in both patient discharge and emergency department cases in all categories. And you can see it was 50%. They represented 50% of the patient discharge cases and 65% of the ER cases for mental illness and substance abuse. African Americans and whites have disproportionately higher population-based rates in both patient discharge and emergency department compared to the general population. And over half of both the patient discharges and the emergency room encounters for people with mental illness and substance abuse were paid for by public insurance. So this represents a significant burden in terms of economics to the system. This table, I'm showing you this to show you what classifications come under the AHRQ, clinical classification system for mental illness substance abuse. So in the patient discharge data, you can see the majority of the cases are either schizophrenia-related or affective disorder, which is depression. Only about 7% are alcohol-related, and 9% are substance abuse-related. That's quite different for the emergency room cases. Now, I want to tell you, these cases are not duplicated. We took the cases that were admitted out of the emergency room data. So these are the people who were in the emergency room data set not admitted. And you can see the majority of those were anxiety disorder, other mental conditions, a much higher rate of alcohol-related and substance abuse-related cases. The far, your far right column, you can see these are percentages of the percent of cases that were admitted for each condition. To give you an idea of kind of when somebody comes in for schizophrenia, they're far more likely to be admitted than for other diagnoses. The majority of people who show up with an acute psychotic episode are admitted. The anxiety disorders and so forth are much less likely to be admitted. For the 15-year period, there were 6 million admissions for mental illness or substance abuse or injury in California. And that represented 1.6 million people, which means those 1.6 million people, many of them had multiple admissions for these conditions. The overall rate of admission for mental illness and substance abuse was 94.7 per 10,000 in 1991 and 89.1 per 10,000 in 2005, and this represents a significant overall decrease over the period of the study. The next three sets of graphs will describe the trends and the patterns of the admissions during the 15-year study period. This first set of graphs is looking at gender, age, and age and race ethnicity. So the two top graphs are females. On the left, females in 1991, the right, females 2005, and the bottom are the males for those periods. In terms of the color of the lines, which will be the same for the next couple of slides, the red line represents the African American population, the purple line are whites, the green line are Hispanics, and the blue line are Asians. So you can see that for each time period, for both women and men, admissions peak during the reproductive period between 15 and, I don't know if I can make this happen here, between 15 and 44 or 45. And that's true for men, and that's true for the most part in both time periods. White and black rates are 3 to 4 times higher than Asians and Hispanics. White youth show a peak here at this 15-year range for women for both time periods and for men in the 1991, but that kind of disappears in 2005 when the male rates overall were increasing for all age groups. So that peak no longer appears. The other phenomena that you can see in these are five-year age groups at the bottom, that the highest rates in 1991 were somewhere between 30 and 45 for both men and women, and for both African Americans and whites. By 2005, there's a cohort effect. You can see that the peak admission rates occur later on, and the highest rates occur between 40 and 55. These four graphs show mental health substance abuse admissions per 10,000 population by gender, age group, and race ethnicity over time. So you can see we're looking at these are trends over time between 1991 and 2005. Females, 15 to 24, males 15 to 24, and this is the 25 to 34 year age group. I'm not showing the 34 to 45 year age group, but I will mention it when I describe the findings. The disparity of mental illness substance abuse admissions between Black African Americans and whites compared with Hispanics and Asians, who have much lower rates, persists over the entire 15-year time period in all ages and subcategories. Since 1999, white rates are increasing, while black rates are decreasing or level, except for black males 25 to 34, where the rate is also increasing. For white women in the age group 15 to 24, rates rose from being the same as African Americans to being significantly higher by 2005. In the age group 25 to 34, rates rose from being significantly lower than African Americans to being the same. For men, African Americans continue to have the highest rates, although the gap is narrowing, as you can see. Over here, the gap is narrowing for males, but overall, the rates remain higher for African Americans. In the 34 to 45-year-old group, which is not shown, the disparity between blacks and whites and others remains persistent, but the relationships between African Americans and whites are different, with the rates in the white women rising to higher than the African American rates in 1997 and remaining higher throughout 2005. But for males, the rates for African Americans and whites remain about the same throughout the period. This next set of graphs looks at self-injury hospitalizations. One of the things we didn't show was we found a tremendous lack of reporting of mental health diagnoses, when a significant number of injury cases that were self-injuries did not have a coexisting mental health diagnosis on any of the records. That was kind of interesting. So we decided to look at self-injury as a separate issue. And so trends for self-injury are different from those of mental illness and substance abuse. Over the 15-year period, rates for whites rose while rates for African-American women fell, so that the rates for whites changed from being the same as African-Americans in terms of women and being significantly higher in all age groups, including the 35 to 44 age group, which we're not showing here. For white men, rates rose or were level during the 15-year period, while rates for African-American men decrease, leaving rates for white men higher for the 15 to 24 age group, the 25 to 34 age group, and even in the 35 to 44-year age group. Rates for Hispanic and Asian patients decreased or remained the same, but as the African-American rates decreased, the gap between those race and ethnic subgroups began to narrow or disappear. This chart looks at the comorbidity of mental illness and substance abuse in our patient-level relationships as opposed to the discharge level. So these are the linked, this chart comes from the linked records, person-level records. As you can see, it shows for each ethnic group, it shows the percent who had a mental illness diagnosis only, a substance abuse diagnosis only, or both a mental health and a substance and both a mental illness and substance abuse diagnosis over the 15-year period. So a significant number had, almost a third in African Americans and whites, had this comorbid condition over time. In this second from the right column, this shows for those who were initially identified with a mental illness diagnosis, 51% eventually were found to have a substance abuse diagnosis at some point. And this last column shows that for those initially identified with substance abuse, the percent who ultimately were found to have a mental illness diagnosis. And again, this was the rates of overlap for comorbidity for mental illness where substance abuse was later found were very similar. There's different patterns here, especially with very low rates for those with substance abuse and mental health problems in the Asian subgroup. These two pie charts were created to show the relationship between mental illness, substance abuse, and injury. This is the person-level data set, which means these are individuals. About a quarter of the individuals had overlapping diagnoses, and at the discharge level, 58% had overlapping diagnoses. This chart shows the increasing number of repeat admissions, depending upon whether you had injury alone, substance abuse or mental health alone, or both injury, substance abuse, and mental health. There was a 2 to 5 times increase for each ethnic group as you had more comorbid conditions. So, in terms of conclusions, the overall mental illness, substance abuse admission rates decreased over time, over our time period. Men and women in the reproductive years have the highest admission rates in both time periods. Racial disparities persist with whites and African Americans disproportionately affected. White rates are increasing significantly over time, while African American rates decrease, or in the case of a few cases, remain the same. White self-injury rates increase significantly and were highest in all age and gender subgroups starting in 1999. Over time, there's a significant overlap in mental illness and substance abuse diagnoses in individuals, with 40 to 50% of each group also having acute episodes of the other condition. 58% of injury admissions show co-occurrence with mental illness, substance abuse, or both. Persons with both mental illness and injury have 2 to 5 times the total number of admissions compared to people without those comorbid situations. So our recommendations include recommendations for further research to determine factors related to the changing hospitalization rates among the different race and ethnic groups for both mental illness, substance abuse, and injuries. We would like to explore the relationship between access to outpatient mental health services and patient discharge and emergency room encounters. because it's counterintuitive the way it is now. You would assume, because of socioeconomic differences, that African Americans and Hispanics and so forth would have less access to care and more likely to use the ER or end up in the hospital. But that's not what we're seeing. So because of that, we're interested in exploring the relationship between incarceration rates and mental illness and substance abuse hospitalization by rates, because there is some data showing that often poor folks end up being admitted to juvenile facilities or adult criminal justice facilities when they have a mental health problem and there is no other care available. The other thing we would want to do is promote clinician screening for all persons admitted to any of these, to either hospital or emergency department, for mental health, substance abuse, or injury for each of the other conditions, and would recommend that primary care facilities for either mental health, substance abuse, or injuries institute long-term case management to avoid the comorbidity of these other conditions, which result in many hospitalizations and in extreme costly care. Thank you.
Please note your questions. We'll have 10 minutes at the end for group questions. And our next presenter.